Who here likes romantic comedies? I know that's a bit of a shift in gears here from that song, but who likes romantic comedies? I have to admit, I really like romantic comedies. And I remember when I started dating my wife, Amy, we'd watch a lot of movies because we didn't have much money, we didn't have much to do, so we'd watch a lot of movies, and we'd watch a lot of romantic comedies, but quickly we ended up finding out that we weren't really watching those for us, we were watching them for me. And actually, that's true. One time I was like selecting a movie, like pulling out the DVDs, and Amy's like, "Kyle, I have to actually admit, I don't really like romantic comedies. I'm more of an action adventure girl." And so now we watch action adventures, and occasionally when Amy's out or something for the evening, I'll sneak a romantic comedy in on Netflix and get my little. I don't know what I get out of them. But what I really love about romantic comedies is first that I just love comedy. I just love something that's lighthearted, that I know will resolve well, that I know I can sort of just laugh about. But I also, I'm a bit of a romantic, I think. My wife's not here today because she's away with a sick kid, so you can't look over at her to see if I'm telling the truth or not. But but I love the sweeping romantic gestures, you know, and you can watch them, and they sort of have changed and evolved over the decades. In the 80s, it was always the classic scene where the guy would show up with the boombox, right? And he'd stand there and it would play their song. And then the girl would suddenly realize that she actually loved him. Then in the 90s, there was the Beast, and he gave the poor French girl a library and a whole bunch of furniture to be her friends. Then in the 2000s, we had the story that was written, a new story every day in a lovely notebook. And then in 2013, one of my favorites was where Tony Stark set off fireworks for Pepper in Iron Man 3. And that one was actually for my wife, but I had to find the romantic gesture in there. But as we watch these movies, I always think about the displays of love and what they mean. And sometimes I remember when I was first dating, I was like, I'm going to pick something out of this and I'm going to use it. And it never worked. But I love seeing these sweeping gestures, these displays of love. And so today we're actually going to be looking at a book that it shows some of these displays of love. And they're profound and they're deep and they're layered and they go beyond sweeping moments where some guy is just trying to win the girl, but it actually goes much further. We're looking at this true, deep type of love called hesed, this loving kindness. And if you were here a couple weeks ago, you might remember about that, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But for those who don't know me, my name is Kyle. I'm one of the pastors here at Emmanuel. It's my privilege to get to come up here and share most Sundays, and we are in the book of Ruth. We're kind of journeying through. If you're here last week and you suddenly catch on that we're talking about Ruth 2, yes, we did do Ruth 2 last week, but there's so much in this little book that we decided to extend it just a little bit more. And so we're spending 2 weeks in chapter 2. So if you have a Bible, feel free to turn there to Ruth chapter 2. And Ruth, for those who don't know, it's this great little love story. It's only 4 chapters in length. And like I say, it on the surface, we see some romance, we see some love. But as we dig deeper into it, we see that this book is actually about way more than that. And really, in fact, the book's not just about this love story. That's only just sort of the setting, the scene that we see of this couple who lived long ago in the ancient Near East. But it's actually about God and His love and His provision. And we see as we go through this book, actually, some examples of how perhaps we could live an extraordinary way of life even now, today. And that extraordinary way of life, it's this way of life called hesed. And as I mentioned, this word hesed is loving kindness. There's not actually a real English equivalent for this word. It's a Hebrew word. It's really deeply layered, and it's often used, and most often used, to describe this characteristic of God, this steady, loving, loyal God who loves his people. And we see that it's really this loyal love because it's a love with no exit strategy. There's nothing that people could do to sort of push God away. And God, time and time again, he comes to the people even when they don't deserve it, or perhaps they've pushed him away, and he loves them and he provides for them and he wants to see his people flourish. And so he does things throughout history where he helps them along the way in order to see them flourish. And here in the book of Ruth, though, we see that this word actually gets adopted to be a descriptor for the way that some individuals live their lives, these lives where, that exhibit a loving kindness. And we see that through the actions that the people who lived long ago took, that God actually weaves his story, his blessing, his flourishing for his people through this. We see that this romance, this love story, is actually going to bring two people together who will end up having a baby, which will end up being what blesses an old, lonely widow named Naomi, who we see at the beginning of the book. But then it's not just about blessing Naomi, it's actually about blessing all of God's people. And we see that through that birth, we're actually going to come and find a way that God wants to bless his nation of Israel by having King David be down and a grandson from there. And then we see, as we trace that family lineage, that God actually uses that family to bless the whole world, because through that family line, through this story, we eventually arrive at Jesus, who has come for us. And so with all that in mind, as we read through this chapter, which we're about to do in a moment, I'd encourage you, just keep your eyes open. Just look for, pay attention to those moments where sort of this loving kindness, a display of love, might be shown. And so, as I said, in Ruth chapter 2, if you don't have a Bible, we have some at the table at the back. Feel free to grab one. You can even get up while I'm talking and go grab one if you'd want one. Take it home. It's our gift to you. So Ruth chapter 2. Now Naomi, this is the old widow we had met previously, who has lost her husband, she's lost her sons, she's now traveling with just her one daughter-in-law. So now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite, that's her daughter-in-law, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up what the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. But as it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvest, "Who does that young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has now remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz goes over to Ruth, and he said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the fields where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground, and she asked him, "Why? Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied to her, he says, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all that she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and do not reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and do not rebuke her. So Ruth, she goes out and she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over, and after she had eaten enough. So her mother-in-law asked, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Because blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I work with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added that, he is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers. Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, stay with me and stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all of my grain." Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you may be harmed." So Ruth, she stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Let me pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for the wisdom that we can glean from it. Lord, I pray that as we reflect on your word this morning, would you speak to us? Would you speak into our hearts what we need to hear from you? Would these words be not mine, but be yours? We thank you, Jesus. We love you. In your name we pray. Amen. So in order for us to sort of understand this, to sort of transcend the space and time that is between us and the world as it was when Ruth lived, we have to get caught up a little bit on some cultural context. And we see that Ruth, when she arrives in Bethlehem, she's come back, there's been a famine, and she's with her mother-in-law. They have no husbands, and so they have no sons. They have no way of sort of keeping themselves going, keeping their livelihood alive. And so Ruth calls upon a cultural practice of being allowed to go out into the Israelite field and glean some of the crops that are left over. And so when we go out, when we first read this, you might be like, it kind of seems like she's stealing. She's like going out into people's field, taking their stuff. But this is actually something that God had instituted. And when you went out into these fields, it wasn't a great job. It wasn't a job that you'd want to do if you were going along. Last week, I kind of likened it to collecting bottles or cans. Thank you so much, Amy. And so they would go out and they would sort of just collect what they could to make a living. And so Ruth, she's gone out, and her mother-in-law, she's just sort of overwhelmed by this sorrow of her life. She doesn't have a husband. She doesn't have kids. She doesn't have grandkids, which she hoped for. And now she's just returned to her homeland. She's a broken and battered woman. And so she just lays there in despair. But Ruth, she's like, I'm not going to succumb to what you've come to, my mother. I'm going to actually go out and provide for us. And so she goes and does it. And as I said, God instituted this way of living. He actually built it into his law because he wanted to see people, including foreigners and widows and orphans, cared for. And so in Deuteronomy 24:19, we have this record of what God says. He says, "When you are harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back and get it, but actually leave it for the foreigner, for the fatherless, for the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." So God, right from early on, has set this rule for his people that they should care for others. And in fact, they're not just caring for others, but God uses this as an instrument to bless those who follow along with it. And so as we learned last week, we see that God, he ends up orchestrating a whole bunch of things. Because Ruth, she goes out to the fields, and all of the people's fields would have been in sort of one plot area, and they would have just been divided by stone markers, most likely. And Ruth just sort of, she happens upon, it says in the text, the Boaz's field. But we know that God has orchestrated this all. And as she's there and she wants to glean and collect for her mother and for herself, Boaz, the owner of the land, who is also a distant relative to her mother-in-law's deceased husband, he shows up and he takes notice of this woman working in his field, one who is not one of his workers. Now, I don't know what she looked like, but I'm guessing that Ruth was a pretty stunning woman. Because right off the bat, he sort of arrives, he says hi to his foreman and to his workers, and then suddenly he's like, who is that woman? That's what we get. Who is that? And so he grabs his foreman. He's like, tell me about her. And then the foreman goes on, and he just starts telling the story. But as he tells the story about who this woman is, we actually see that he describes what truly makes her beautiful, beyond just her outward appearance, perhaps, that she might have had in the field. He goes on to tell her that she's the widow who's returned to this country. She's left her home country with her mother-in-law. She's abandoned everything that she's had. She's left it behind her, and now she's hard at work gleaning from the edges of the field to provide for herself and especially to provide for her mother-in-law. And so Boaz, he takes note of this. He's like, wow, that woman is exceptional. She is truly living out this love and kindness. And so he ends up extending love and kindness to her as well. And we'll see that he actually does it far beyond what he's required to do. And it's so much, in fact, that after this long day of work, Ruth returns home to Naomi, and she's carrying in everything that she's brought back from the fields. And Naomi's sort of taken back. We can sort of catch this in the text. She's like, where did you work today? I mean, what is going on? Where did you get all that from? Because you were out bottle collecting, but now you've come home with so much. Like, who is the man who owns this field who would take notice of you and be so good to you? I mean, Ruth, she's come home with a lot. Not only does she have leftovers from a lunch that she didn't take with her, but then suddenly she has this ephah of barley. Now, we know using the biblical calculations of how much that would have been, she would have shown up with somewhere between 10 and 20 liters of barley, which is, you know, that's a lot of barley. It might not translate to us, but what that translated to them, would be enough barley that they could eat for just over a week. So she's gone out and she's collected enough food that her and her mother-in-law can eat for just over a week. And when you kind of put that in context of collecting bottles, how much would that be? I mean, that's not just stumbling along a blue bin on the corner that's full of wine bottles, but this is actually like someone has just backed up the truck to the bottle depot, dumped it all, and said, here you go, take it all. And she now has all of this stuff, and it's such a good thing, and it's obviously a sign of someone's generosity. Now, when I think about that, I think, like, I'm probably never going to be a person. I've never been in that situation where I'm going to have to be harvesting the field edges. Maybe in my life, I'm never going to look out and see a widow gleaning, and I'm going to be able to help her. So when we see this, sometimes we go, well, what's the translation? How do I show this loving kindness? How do I exhibit this? If Ruth and Boaz are supposed to be these examples, what does that mean? What does it look like? But I think there's so many ways that we can take this and we can apply it to our lives, and I think it's really important to. And so why is it important? Because we see actually that Jesus talks about this. He talks about this way of loving other people. And in John 13:35, he talks about that we will be known as Jesus followers by our love for one another. That the way we live, that the loving kindness that we exhibit to one another will actually show people that we are followers of His. So if you were to translate this into the language of Ruth, it would sort of be like they know their devotion to God, their goodness, their riches by the chesed that they show to one another. And we see that Ruth, she actually takes initiative to put this into practice. She doesn't just sort of sit back. She's got this mother-in-law who's just in despair. She's broken. She's weeping. She's just laying around. But Ruth says, you know what? I'm going to take the initiative. I'm going to get something done. I'm going to live out what I need to live out because it's the right thing to do. And that's what we are all faced with when we think about living a life of loving kindness. We can't just wait around to get things done. We can't just wait around and expect great things to happen. There's actually a difference between intent and being intentional. There's a difference between being intent and being intentional, and that difference is action. right? Because we can all sit around, and especially as Christians, we often think about, we hear about the goodness of God. We just sang about it, in fact, and we think about how good he is, and we want to live it out, and we want to express what we've received from God and share that a little bit with the world and live out of that. And oftentimes we sit there and we're like, yeah, like I got the intent. I'm excited about this. This is what I want to do. But then if we never put it into action, we actually fail our intent because we were never intentional. And so I think a lot of the times we actually miss the mark in our walk as followers of Jesus because we have the intent of exhibiting loving kindness. We have the intent of showing the world what Jesus has done for us, but we actually fail to get intentional. But it's not easy. And in the example of Ruth, we see that she actually had to go into a situation that was no piece of cake. Ruth put herself in danger. We don't necessarily read that because we don't see that because we weren't there. But in that time, to be a woman working out in the field by yourself, not attached or affiliated with anyone, left you exposed to all types of danger. It's why Boaz is intentional in telling his men, you watch out for her. You don't touch her. You don't even rebuke her. You need to let her do what she's doing. And so she's actually exposed herself to risk and to danger in order to accomplish what is right. But then we also see Boaz. Boaz does something else which is a little bit different. At first we're told that he is a man of standing. That's this expression to say he has a strength of character. He's a good person. He has godly characteristics that we want to see in somebody. And as we walk through chapter 3 and 4, we're going to see more of this come to light. And we see this character here now, though, who on the surface is particularly nice because he sees a beautiful woman and he provides for her. But Boaz actually, he went far beyond that because not only did he just allow her in her field, which he had to do by custom and by law anyways, but he goes beyond that and he provides her that protection. He promises her safety. And then he says, you know what, I want you to stick with the people who work for me, not just for a day, not just for a little bit. You know, you've had a good day today. You got lots. Go home, take a week off because you got a week worth. No, he says, I want you to come back. And I want you to harvest with my team through the harvests. And so there's the barley harvest, then there's the wheat harvest. Each one would take about a month in length. So he's given her multiple months of sources of food because she's taking home more than a day's worth of food at a time because Boaz's men have been told to leave more additional food out for her. And so she's actually taking home a lot. So she's getting to store up a whole bunch out of what Boaz would have used for his own profit, for the own provision of his family. So Boaz is actually showing this radical kind of generosity. And so when we look at the book of Ruth, we actually see that Boaz and Ruth are ideal models of extraordinary character. And I think we can all say that we want to have extraordinary character. No one wants to say, oh, I want to be a scoundrel, I want to be a cheat, I want to just skim by life. Everyone wants to be extraordinary. And we see that, in fact, it is the case because their loving kindness is actually life-changing. These little things that they exhibit, which on the surface isn't so much. Ruth goes out to get some food and provide for her mother-in-law. Boaz gives a little bit extra. But we see that those things actually lead to life change. We see that Naomi's life is changed by bringing in new family, by bringing in new blessing. We see that Boaz and Ruth will become married. They'll have a child, which will lead to be the line of Jesus. And so, of course, as we look through Scripture, we see them as examples. And we see that they're sort of just a taste, a foreshadowing of what we will later see Jesus to be. The ultimate example of Chesed. He's truly the ideal model. And Jesus lived in order that God could be seen and known in new and tangible ways. He lived out life for people. And then he set out laws. He set out ways of living so people would understand what it should look like. In Matthew chapter 22, verse 37 and 39, we see that Jesus tells his followers, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. And then not only do that, but I want you to love your neighbor as yourself. These two laws, they're not mutually exclusive. They're meant to be lived out in harmony together. And so as Christians, as those of us who are following Jesus, our love of our God should shape our love and the interactions we have with those around us. And so we need to think about this. Why does it all come together? What does it look like in the context that we are in? Well, as followers of Jesus, we want to be that expression of him. We want to be that likeness of him. In fact, the word that we have as disciples gives us this connotation of being an apprentice. A good apprentice is an exact carbon copy of the person that has taught them. They learn everything. They want to take in every bit of teaching and training, and not just understanding the technical skill, but understanding the heart and the passion for what they're learning. And so we too should do that. And at the very core of Jesus is love. Within everything Jesus came to accomplish, there was chesed. Jesus was and is the very presence of God upon the earth. God living in the flesh, coming to live and die as a means of showing true love and kindness. Loving us when we were still separate from him. All that Jesus came to do was really to bring himself so that those of us who want to experience the flourishing and blessing of God could do so by having faith. And we see that this isn't just a New Testament thing. This stuff is woven in the Old Testament. That's why we go to this stuff in Scripture. We actually see that God has always been a champion for his people. He wants to exhibit love and kindness that allows others to flourish. So God actually gave Naomi Ruth so that Ruth could allow her to flourish. God gave Boaz to Ruth so that Ruth could flourish. And then we see on and on it goes. So my question is, as someone who is an apprentice of Jesus, as a follower of Jesus, how are you going to live that out? How are you going to take this thing that is at the very core of who God is, this expression of loving kindness, and how are you going to live it out so that those around you can flourish? When we look at the example of Boaz, we see that he went beyond what he had to do. As a field owner, Boaz was required by God to ensure that there's a little rim around his property that the poor and the foreigner could grab from. But he went way beyond it. He invited Ruth even in under his shelter to have lunch with him and his workers, where she would not typically have been allowed to do that. And then not only did he give her lunch, he gave her all the leftovers and sent her home with it. Everything she couldn't eat, she got to take. So Boaz was providing for Ruth so she could flourish. We see it again when we zoom back out to Jesus, who will eventually come through the lineage that happens because of Ruth and Boaz's marriage. When Jesus went beyond what we deserve, we experience the grace of God. We experience who God is and get to be in relationship with him because of his grace and mercy. It's our acts, it's our actions, it's our thoughts, it's the way we live our lives that separate us from God. And God wasn't required to do anything to fix that. But he chose out of his loving kindness to live and to die so that we too could flourish by having faith in him. So as I look at this, there was one other thing that struck me this week. I noticed something that about the way that chesed is lived out through history. Chesed is always extended to people where they are at. It's always where they are at. No one needs to come for it. Jesus came while we were still sinners. Boaz extended the invitation to Ruth to come in to take on more before he had even talked to her when he saw her. We see this, it's not some religious setting. It's not just a church setting where this all takes place. And sometimes we can get into that mentality as a church, that we're going to experience and we're going to exhibit loving kindness to the world, but we're going to do it all here in this room. But in fact, we actually see that these people chose to live it out in their workplace. This is Boaz's workplace where he was. This is Boaz's fields where he would harvest from, and he would have his workers work and do their thing, and they are there. Do you know for the majority of us, we will spend one-third of our life at work? It's kind of depressing, I know, but think about that. Like a third of your life is going to be spent at work. It's not going to be at church. It's not going to be all at home. A third of your life is going to be at work. And the reality is we just spend our lives working so that we can live in some ways. And as I think about that, I think, man, like if that's a third of my time, if a third of my time is at an office or wherever I'm working, how do I leverage that? How do I make it worth it? It's not just worth it to put food on the table, but I want to actually work and be an example of who Jesus is. Now, this might not be a profound thought. I know many of us have wrestled through that and worked with it, but most of us, we'll never live in a Christian work. We'll never work in a Christian workplace, at least not for the majority of our life. And so this question of how do we exhibit loving kindness to the same extreme that Jesus lived it out, how do we do that in our workplace? And that's the question I'd love you to walk away with today. How do I do that? How am I going to sort of redeem and remake this my significant chunk of time at work to do something? And I don't know what everyone here does for work, but I know we have some people who work in sales. So how do you exhibit chesed in sales? Like, how do you do that? Boaz's work was about making some money, providing for the family, doing all that kind of stuff. But what if instead of closing a deal, maybe you're on commission, instead of closing a deal, you know that you have a coworker who is just in a financial rocky situation. Maybe you're doing okay this month. Maybe you're getting by, you're doing all right, and you in turn turn over that sale to a coworker. Wow. Could you imagine if you did that? Could you imagine the impact that would have? I think that's a little bit like Boaz, isn't it? It would just be radically generous. It would literally change someone's life to take a little bit of what you would have profited and hand it over to someone else. What if it was something of just around giving thought and then putting into action? What if you have that friend, that coworker, maybe you're in school and you have that classmate who you know, you just know that there's stuff going on in their life. What if you went up to them and followed Jesus' words and said, love your neighbor as yourself? And said, okay, what would I love in this situation? What would I need in this situation? And then you chose to exhibit it to them. Ruth did that. She did that for Naomi. But what if you have that workplace, and I know we can all probably picture this person right away, but that person that you work with who just drives you up the wall. You know that person who you just rub raw? Maybe they're a person who takes digs at you at work. Maybe they're a person who they try to undermine your project so they can advance theirs. Like, I'm going to look a little bit better, so I'm going to sort of disparage this person over here. What if instead of kind of ignoring that person or chasing after that person, you chose to forgive that person? But then instead of just moving on, you actually chose to help that person on their project. What if you chose to be that example for them? To me, that sounds a lot like Jesus, what he would do. But I don't just want to always leave us with a challenge as a church. I think we need to be encouraged because I've been here for, I think it's 16 months, going on 17 months, and I've been watching us as a church. Where has this type of stuff been on display? And I actually think we do a good job of this. I've been really excited to see how our church exhibits loving kindness to other people. Since I've been here, I've seen multiple people, multiple community groups and individuals who have chosen to love and support immigrants, asking nothing in return. I've seen community groups rally around people within their community groups around them and care for them, love them, need them when they're sick or they need something. I've seen people who couldn't afford to move be helped by people who said, you know what, I'll take a Saturday off, I'll show up and help you move. I've seen people who have bought neighbors and friends, people in the church, people outside of the church, they've bought them groceries. I've seen people give over cash to help someone buy a vehicle. I've seen people in our church community pitch in thousands of dollars to Blue Jay Elementary to help families who couldn't afford to have winter clothing have winter clothing. I've seen us contribute to what God is doing in the world through education and church planning. I've seen so many examples where people have just needed somebody to come alongside of them and pray with them, where we have shown up and prayed for them, prayed for healing, prayed for circumstances to change. I have seen people show loving kindness. And so I think we should be encouraged as a church. We are showing in many ways who Jesus is by our love that we put on display. And so sometimes when we walk out of church, we walk out of here, where is the touch point? Where does it all go? Sometimes we walk away challenged, and we should. We need to be challenged because we're all so far from being like Jesus. But sometimes we need to stop and celebrate. And so I'd encourage you to do that today. Look around at those who are sitting beside you. Look at those who are sitting in front and behind. Those people are living a life of chesed. I'm proud of us. Now let me pray. Father, I thank you for this church. I thank you for each and every person you have brought here to contribute to what we are doing, to what you ultimately are doing. God, I thank you that you have given us so many people who have such a heart for you. God, I thank you that that continues to grow and be fostered as a church. God, I thank you for the community groups who surround those within their group who are struggling, and they love them and they pray for them. God, I thank you for the people who out of their resources have bought others groceries and helped people have roofs over their heads and provided people cars and so many more things. God, I thank you for that. God, we thank you that you say that as we leave things for those in need, that you will bless the work of our hands. And Lord, I pray that you would bless the work of our hands. But God, we do it all in response to you. Jesus, we thank you that you came to live and die and rise again so that we might flourish by having faith in you. I thank you that you have called each one of us to play a part in that mission. God, I thank you for your example of giving people at that point in time of history, of Ruth and Boaz, to live lives that you would use to orchestrate their actions, their loving kindness, to allow people to flourish. For Naomi then, and us now, having received Jesus. Father, I pray that we would be a church that would exemplify who you are. Lord, that we would love you with all our hearts, our souls, and our minds. That we would love our neighbors. That we would do all of this love, all this expression to point people towards you. That people would see that we are your followers by our love, but that wouldn't just make us look good. But Lord, it would be about bringing you glory. So God, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for your word. I thank you for your church, that I get to be a part of it. We love you, Jesus. Pray in your name. Amen.